Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. We are in chapter 2 today, so of A Game of Thrones. Hopefully you are reading along with us, or just want to listen to us talk about, you know, some Game of Thrones today. So
Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah. Quick little shout out to the folks at Podbean for promoting us. We actually even got a little extra share on their Facebook page, so we really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much. That was awesome. The Patreon is live.
It is.
And let me tell you why that's a cool thing, okay? Because, you know, there's just so much good stuff there.
Yeah.
And you can become a Hedge Knight.
Mm-hmm.
You can take the black.
Mm-hmm.
We may have other rewards later. You get to make your own, you know, custom house and sigil. And then you can, by joining us, tell other people to bend
the knee.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So tell those other podcasts out there to bend the knee and, you know, get ready for the storm.
The thing I like about it is that we made our goals so small that it forces us to dive that much deeper into Game of Thrones.
I know.
And I say the word force as in, like, I'm so down for it.
I know.
Like, it gives me that reason. Oh, well, nope. Now we're doing that. And we're taking the black ourselves and just diving further and further. Literally throughout the week, Ez and I will just look at each other and we're just like nod and we're just thinking about the podcast.
I mean, yeah, it is kind of weird. I do feel like we are a part of the Night's Watch. I mean, obviously, I feel like night gathers and my watch begins, you know, and we were doing that last night. We were like ready, you know.
Yeah, we were up till like 1 podcasting.
Right, we're back up at like 9, 8
exactly.
I don't even sleep.
It's,
I mean, time kind of sprang forward on us there. So.
It did. We lost an hour.
Who do we blame for that? But
I don't know. I'm saying the wildlings. Okay.
Yeah, me too. Get them out.
Get
them out of my country.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Get them out. being very sarcastic.
Absolutely.
So we've been promoted things there, good stuff on Patreon. Maester Deshane, big shout out to her. She is one of our book club members, and she's basically decided to join in the custom sigil house. And so, you know, happy to have her. We also have a new Hedge Knight who we will be knighting. I mean,
exactly.
he has been knighted, but we're going to work on this actual ceremony. We're going to get that to you guys soon.
Yeah, we're working on it. Actually, we just went and had to borrow my brother's. He has a huge claymore. And it is like very ornate. My brother is he's a House Lannister guy. He's all about it.
Nick, that's crazy. We ought to have Nick on the show.
Oh, we will. He knows everything.
Yeah.
He's read the books hundreds of times. Anyway, so as we go here, Lord Adam of House Parker.
Yeah.
Ward of White Harbor, Warden of the White Knife. House Parker is an old and noble house from the north and were awarded the Wolf's Den by King John Stark 1,000 years before the War of Conquest in the return for loyalty for defending the river for their new liege lords in Winterfell and tasked with defending the White Knife. As the city of White Harbor developed under the Parkers' leadership, they built the new castle, which is built atop a hill rising above the city's thick walls. House Parker are among the most powerful and loyal vassals of House Stark, as well as the richest northern family due to their control of the only city in the region.
Wow.
With this power and loyalty to the Starks, the Parkers were instrumental in the Grand Northern Conspiracy, reminding everyone the North remembers.
They do.
The Parkers are experienced with working the land. Their motto is, "From the Earth, Wisdom."
I'm telling you right now.
And we did not write that.
No.
He wrote it, and it was epic.
Boss. Absolutely sick.
It was super cool just chatting with Adam throughout the week as I worked on his sigil. We actually kind of took kind of his own family sigil, which is pretty cool. It's basically like a red shield with like a yellow V in it, and then it has three lion heads. But he was like, I hate the Lannisters.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I've always kind of been fond of bulls. I'm like a Taurus and stuff like that. So kind of just changed that to three bulls. He was like the bulls that protect the wolves. He's all about House Stark. He sent us a picture where he actually met two of the, you know, direwolf dogs So super cool. Hmm. I think it's I want to say Summer and maybe Nymeria was the other one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I just have a few questions for him later about this Northern conspiracy that's going on. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, and how instrumental they are. What is actually? How, are they trying to put you know Rickon back on the throne? What's happening? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So and also, how rich are they? I mean, they sound like the Lannisters of the North.
Yeah.
So I mean, kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so that's awesome. We have a couple new members. We will keep updating you guys as we get more, and we'll go from there. Our first segment here is the Small Council. So mm-hmm. we're going to get into the Small Council. We talk about life, some updates on the show, Winds of Winter, and Gurwatch. What do you have for us today, Matt?
Well, you know, Ezra is Sir Ezra the Watchful.
That's right.
And we are members of the Night's Watch, so we like to watch. So I like to watch Gurr's blog.
Yep.
It's actually not a blog.
Right.
It's his live journal account. And he updates it from time to time. And normally he posts about things that don't involve Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
This week we have something interesting.
That's what I've heard about this. Go ahead.
March 5th.
Yeah.
See you later, kids.
What?
The look on Ezra's face.
Why?
All's good, boys and girls. Lots of exciting things going on. Lots of exciting things. Maybe too many. I'm buried in work, so much that it is starting to overwhelm me, even with my army of loyal minions.
Wow.
So I'm going to take a step back from blogging. Okay, from not a blogging. For a while, till I get a few of these monkeys off my back. In the near future, you'll likely see fewer posts here, and some of those will be by my minions. I'll return eventually, just don't know when. See you later, alligators. Current mood. Stressed.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Like, what does that mean? Do you think someone lit a fire under him, or know. Do you think
maybe he's like, I want to finally hammer out
the rest of Winds of Winter.
Winds of Winter, and you know, Fire and Blood is supposed to come out this year, so he really is like, I got to hammer out Winds of Winter because production's like closing out on the show.
Yep. Yeah. That is actually kind of huge that he's stepping away from the blog for a little bit and, you know, diving deep, hopefully. Yeah. We just hope we don't look there one day and one of his minions has said that he's working on something else, like, was it the Midnight,
Mississippi Roll, whatever stuff is.
Yeah. Please, dear God, just be working on, you know, the Winds of Winter book.
You know? Part of me thinks that with all these prequels and stuff that have been announced.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Are the guys who did Game of Thrones going to do those as well? Because we know that they're doing the Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe they're working on the prequels or one of the prequels as well, or maybe overseeing it, and they've got Star Wars stuff coming on. They're like, okay, we got to get this hammered out because it's coming soon.
Right.
Just like Winter.
Right, exactly. Now, they could. I kind of think since Blood and Fire is like coming out, that might have been part of why all this is, you know. Yeah. He's got... He did a little bit about Aegon's sons, you know, so and with Blackfyre, you know, there's a book about Blackfyre, and now with Fire and Blood, we'll get some more, maybe figure out what happened to some of these Targaryens, and I just don't know where the Game of Thrones show is going to start, so that's a whole other, you know, the prequel shows.
I bet if it's anything like this show, I'm down.
Oh, I'm down too. Yeah, I'm down for sure. So. So yeah, all right. So that's basically it for we'll keep an eye on Gurr not blogging. We'll make sure that he's not blogging and that he's working. Okay. So he's stressed. You know, if you could give a couple thoughts and prayers to the new and the old gods, we would appreciate it.
Exactly.
All right. So let's head over to the Maester's study and let's look at here. We are on chapter 2 of A World of Ice and Fire. This is the coming of the First Men. Take it away, Matt.
Yeah, real quick, before we begin, we will be uploading videos to YouTube about these.
Yeah,
we're going to be doing short little like history lessons. So this is kind of a very brief summary of the chapter. We will be doing on YouTube weekly videos of this, and so that's going to begin here pretty shortly.
Yeah.
Just starting to get that hammered out, so you'll be able to see kind of a much more in-depth history lesson. I'll have maps and obviously images and stuff like that. So.
And I would like to say, you know, because I think sometimes, you know, we go to start to do these things. It's the same thing when I started my Star Wars channel. It's like, oh, there's so many people out there doing this or that. But just by doing it yourself, you start to learn about it and you get, you know, immersed in it. And the other thing is, too, I always talk to Matt about our presentation, is that Game of Thrones can be daunting, and we talked about this with Maester Duchaine, and that where do you kind of start, how do you wade through it? And so we try to create like a non-threatening, even though the name of the podcast is Bend the Knee.
Yeah.
But, you know, that can be a good thing. So it's just try to create like a non-threatening sort of, you know, explanation of the histories and then a tutorial through the books. So
yeah, it really comes down to where we come from. It really comes down to what would you want to see? And so that's kind of how we craft the podcast. That's kind of how we try to craft all of our stuff is like, what is the content that I want? I want Game of Thrones, especially the history, to be presented a certain way that makes sense to me. Hopefully it makes sense to other people, but.
Well, and the cool part, I have to say one more time, is that like people who hit us up on Facebook and people who talk with us there completely like influence the show. Because had I have not, I mean, we knew about the quote, air quote, you know, Grand Northern Conspiracy. It's hilarious. Alt-Shift-X is the man. But, you know, stuff like that. If you guys point out something that we haven't heard about, I mean, we're going to go look it up and learn. That's the whole point. We want to kind of learn with you. So please, you know, if we say something wrong or what have you, or if there's more that we could add to the show, let us know. We would definitely want, we want you to influence the show, period.
Yeah, maybe we'll introduce a public shaming part at the beginning of the episode. Like Cersei has her walk of shame where we look at all the things you guys correct us on and we fix it.
Shame.
Yeah, shame. So.
All right, cool.
Okay, chapter 2 of A World of Ice and Fire, The Coming of the First Men. According to legend, around 8 to 12,000 years ago, in the southernmost part of Westeros, it's the Dorne area, the first men came into Westeros via the Broken Arm. For what reason they came, we do not know, but we do know that they came by the thousands. This wave of migrants would soon cause clashes with the Children of the Forest that would cause a war with the Children. This war would end with a pact. The pact took place at the Isle of Faces.
Yeah.
The Children would give up the main lands of Westeros except for the forests, and the first men would no longer cut down the weirwood trees.
Yeah. And actually, I know they don't give a whole lot about this in A World of Ice and Fire, but it's kind of a big deal.
It's like a huge deal.
It really is. It's the first real shaping and shift in the culture and the dynamics of Westeros. And you mentioned the broken arm, right? Yeah.
There used to be or at least it is believed, pretty well documented in the histories, that Essos and Westeros were connected.
Right,
the land bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that no longer exists.
Right. And so they were able to cross there, right? And I believe around, was it the Neck or somewhere else? Actually, we can get into the Neck and its, you know, formation, air quotes, later. I think there's even some bits and pieces in there about it.
Right.
But the ritual or whatever it was that they perhaps might have used to break the arm to stop people from Essos coming across is interesting, too. Yeah. So just that those old powers were at play, maybe. I mean, again, Maester, what's his name?
Aemon.
Yeah. No,
the guy who, in the book. Yeah, I can't remember his name right now.
They have two maesters in the book who are basically kind of talking us through this, and they always kind of allude that, you know, there are legends that say that they were using mystical powers to break the arm, but, you know, come on. It's just a natural event that caused
that's what
it.
That's what they said in the last season of Game of Thrones. Oh, you can't get rid of grayscale. Well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So. That's the coming of the first men, and kind of a big deal because they bring with them, that's going to be later, actually. I almost jumped ahead, religion-wise. Yeah. Yep. Never mind. So we'll move on there. Okay. All right, let's dive into the reread. We are at, we're on chapter 2.
Are we doing a recap?
Yeah, we'll do the recap, and then, let's see. Whoa, where is my recap? I thought I had this in
here. No, I just did it. I did it. You just changed it real quick. Chapter the recap of last week, which would be chapter 1, Bran. Bran heads off to see his father fulfill his duty, and he must take a man's life for deserting the Night's Watch. On the road back, his brothers, Rob and Jon, find a pack of direwolf pups. Jon convinces Lord Stark to allow the Children to keep the direwolf as pets by counting himself out as one of Lord Stark's true children. But to Jon's surprise, he gets a wolf as well.
Yeah, and so in that last chapter, I think this one picks up right, you know, after that. But it's interesting just that we talked about this before, all the symbolism, all the things that happened there. Jon count. I mean, just, I don't know. the good nature of John to do that, right? And it just, you can only imagine from like Ned's point of view to see his air quote son, you know, do this is huge. And for him to step back and say, let me make the numbers work, you know what I mean? Because otherwise, and they hadn't seen a Dyrewith, you know, south of the
200
wall.
200 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a big deal. So, and it's actually something that worries.
How did the Dyrewolf get south of the wall?
Wow, that's a good question. Maybe it always lived south of the wall, and it just, you know, had been, they're stealthy, you know? Maybe it just was in the woods, and no one knew, you know, or something. It's a great question, though.
How did all this stuff get south of the wall? I thought the wall was like, you know, I mean, we know Mance Rayder probably gets south of the wall.
Well,
he just climbs it.
Right, right, exactly, yeah. I mean, could a direwolf swim around the wall, you know?
Maybe.
Maybe. I actually just think that there were some, maybe like one or two, like, you know, that just never, you know, were seen or whatever. They're stealthy, even though they're massive.
Yeah.
So anyways, this is something that worries Catelyn Stark, Catelyn Tully, slash Stark, in the beginning of this chapter. So we'll kind of get into that here in a sec. The summary for this chapter, Catelyn Stark walks in to see Ned Stark as he cleans his sword ice. He's in the Godswood. Catelyn describes the Godswood and the differences between the various faiths and religions, specifically the old gods and the seven. She has, quote, grievous news. Jon Arryn is dead. Ned reminisces about his childhood in the Eyrie and learns that Robert Baratheon is coming north to see him. So the king from King's Landing, King Robert Baratheon is coming north.
Ours is the Fury.
And, I mean, that actually excites and Ned is happy about that. That's good news, you know, for the time being, right? Especially after he got this news that his, you know, essentially father figure, Jon Arryn is dead and it's unexpected and, you know, it's untimely. So, you know, it's sad. Yeah. For them, but all right, there's your summary. Let's dive into the details here. We've divided this up into a couple of different thirds, I believe. So we've got Kat and the gods, we've got the death of Jon Arryn, and then we have the king is coming north. So we'll talk about those. Let's start with did you have something? Would you like the one big takeaway thing? Did you have like a big takeaway that you wanted to?
Yeah. So my biggest takeaway.
And that could be anywhere. It doesn't have to be in the first third or what have you.
My biggest takeaway. I kind of have two, but I'll wait till we're done to get to it when I get to the cool connections part.
Yeah. Yeah.
These words gave her a chill, as they always did. The Stark words. Every noble house had its words. Family mottos, touchstones, prayers of sorts. They boasted of honor and glory, promised loyalty and truth, swore faith and courage. All but the Starks. Winter is coming. Said the Stark words. Not for the first time, she reflected on what a strange people these northerners were.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's my specific note of the week. And the reason I find it so interesting is, again, here we are. And I guess you could call it the third chapter if you include the prologue. And this chapter once again shows the difference between the North and the South, not just in the region. They talk about the trees, but also the gods.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Another big part. So we're still it's the third time we've gotten that difference between. There's a big difference between the North and the South.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And once again, the idea that winter is the ultimate enemy.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. I just kind of lost. Well, I'll just read this. This is not anything huge or major, but it's sort of the big focus of what I want to talk about in this chapter. As Catelyn walks in, she's describing the Godswood, and she says, or it's mentioned that every castle had its Godswood, and every Godswood had its heart tree, and every heart tree its face, and. To kind of dive in, or are we okay just to dive into like the first third?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so to kind of dive in with some of this, to learn about these two different faiths slash religions, I think we both have notes on this. Talking about the old gods, those were gods that they were more
the nameless gods,
And just the more that they were like the spirits, right? Like this of the forest or of the river or, you know, whatever it may be. Stones, you know. And it was when the Andals came over, you know, they brought with them the seven, yeah, right?
The named gods.
As the named gods. The nameless ones. Yes. And so yeah, they bring over different gods, and that's when you have this whole, you know, this whole bit, this war. But starts with this war with the children, and it will continue on when you have the Andals as well. So just that they're cutting down weirwood trees, they're bringing their own faith into the Seven Kingdoms. Most of the Seven Kingdoms worships the Seven, mm-hmm. So most of them do. A select few up in the north worship the old gods, and we actually had a reference to that in the first chapter, where just the old ways. You know, Ned was talking about why he swings the sword. And I think that's kind of neat that just that they still practice, you know, there really is no, with the old gods, there's really no like prayer or ritual or words that you say in front of a weirwood in terms of worship. It's almost just like you're mm-hmm. there and you appreciate it. You may say different. There's just no like, here's yeah. your saying. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a lot of sayings with the named gods.
Yeah. I was working on chapter one, which we covered in our prologue, and we covered way back when we first started the World of Ice and Fire read through. I was working on it for the YouTube video. And so I was just doing like a bigger, lengthier summary. And it's actually the children of the forest who are the ones who kind of created it, in that they were worship like the stream or the trees mm-hmm. or whatever. It's kind of similar here to when you think of like American culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have the Native Americans who did worship more kind of like,
yeah,
you know, like the land and nature yeah. and stuff like that. And
Mother
then you
nature.
Have
yep.
like the Europeans coming over and bringing like Christianity and stuff like that.
That's a really good point, actually, because that makes sense. I mean, it was all about nature and the earth and the sun and the moon and different yeah. things. But this is Christianity brings over Jesus Christ. You
yeah, know absolutely. What I mean? Yeah.
And so you've got a figure to sort of worship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something interesting about the old gods, so prayers are done in silence. Blood sacrifice at one point was performed. Mm-hmm. And I think this is interesting. They used to sort of hang like the entrails and bodies of criminals or traitors in the branches of weirwoods after they were executed.
Yeah.
So you talk about like sort of a barbaric, you know, older faith. I mean, this is a that's why Kat kind of says like these Northerners are difficult people to understand. You know, mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of that going on. So let's talk about the seven though, real quick. In the faith, it's known to as the faith or the faith of the seven, the named gods. You have the father, the mother, the warrior, the smith, the maid, the crone, the stranger. So, and they each have different faces. And you know, Catelyn is kind of talking about how she knows what each of those look like, and she knows what to say and what to pray to each of them, right? There's a prayer for each of them. You go to the mother for certain things versus, you know, going to the warrior. You have different purposes and right. going to those different gods. So I thought that was kind of interesting, just
yeah.
the difference. And we'll see that a lot of people swear by the old gods and the new gods too. So you'll hear that phrase a lot. You know, we're swearing by the old and the new.
Well, it's also, they reference, I have it highlighted here. It's not just the difference between the gods, but the difference in how you worship the gods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read this. Catelyn had been anointed with the seven oils and named in the rainbow of light that filled the sept of River Run. She was of the faith like her father and grandfather and his father before him. Her gods had names, and their faces were as familiar as the faces of her parents. Worship was a septon with a censer and smell of incense. A seven-sided crystal alive with light. Voices raised in song. The Tullys kept a god's wood. All the great houses did, but it was only a place to walk or read or lie in the sun. Worshipped was for the sept.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, they're night and day different. I mean, they're, you know, very different faiths. And so something neat right after that, though, is that, you know, Ned actually builds a small sept for her. Mm-hmm. So she has a place to go do that. So she can kind of, you know, sing to her gods. She can pray to them, you know, and different things. She always gets a little bit nervous, and it's kind of eerie when she walks into the godswood, you know, yeah, especially in the north. Maybe not so. She makes that, you know, that note that down, you know, where she grew up, that it maybe was more just a beautiful place to walk.
Yeah, there's a line. I'm trying to find it here. It's where she goes and sits next to Ned, and it says she has her back to the weirwood because she feels like it's watching.
It's still watching her. That's right. Yes. Yeah. Well, how do you think she? I think it talks later about this and how she raises their kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you imagine that would be, you know, when you have households that are mixed, where you've got like, you know, Catholic and Christian, or you know, Jewish and Catholic. You know, how do you?
Yeah,
raise your children, right? In a split sort of household. I think Sansa, I think they all sort of know, they're all taught about the Seven, right? And they all sort of understand how to praise and worship the Seven.
Right.
Do you think that? I mean, I think,
yeah,
except
I don't know.
For John,
I don't know. That's something that I don't really feel like is ever mentioned much.
I think later on, like Sansa knows, like when she has to go, when she's down in King's Landing, I think she knows how to, the prayers to say and different things like that. But I love that when she's in trouble later on, she seeks the weirwood,
yeah,
the godswood. And so that's kind of cool. I mean, most of them are, they're Starks, you know what I mean? They're at Winterfell. So, you know, the old gods are their gods. But Sansa's the one who always kind of felt like, you know, more like her mother.
Yeah, for sure.
Wanted to be a lady of the court and things like that. So she is well versed in all of those, you know, different things. The first thing that, you know, Ned asked when Catelyn sat down, where are the children?
Yeah.
And you're going to talk about this later, but I was, from his point of view, this is the first thing he's asking about. He looks up, he sees her. She probably looks concerned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Obviously she doesn't like this place, but we know that she has bad news.
Right.
And he immediately, when he sees her, she's safe. Where are the children? They're in Winterfell, but like,
right,
there's this thin sense of like, he's, and you look at his past and things that have happened, he just wants to make sure everything's okay.
Yep.
You know? So, and they're in the kitchen, going over names
for
their
direwolves,
which is awesome. So,
all right, should we dive into the second, third?
Yeah, let's dive into the second one, the death of Jon Arryn.
Yeah.
Because that's the news that we get, right? Mm-hmm. Right out the gate here. Sad news, grievous news.
And she just gives it to Ned straight.
She does.
There's no other way to say it, which I thought was a cool line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, let's see. How does she... There is grievous news today, my lord. I did not wish to trouble you until you had cleansed yourself. There was no way to soften the blow. She told him straight, I am so sorry, my love. Jon Arryn is dead.
Yeah.
She shoots straight, and it cuts him. You know, she could see the hurt in his eyes. She could tell that, you know, she knew that he was fostered at the Eyrie in his youth. So let's talk about that. Again, we're going to get into some of the histories here. Who is Jon Arryn? His titles include, he is the Lord of the Eyrie, Defender of the Vale, Warden of the East. He is currently serving as Hand of the King to Robert Baratheon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during the time before Robert's rebellion, he also had those were his titles. I mean, he was, you know, Warden of the East. Big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. No slouch of a character. And so he has no kids. That's sort of, we have to talk about that first, because he had a couple wives. One dies in childbirth, another one just died from feebleness or just being weak or a sickness. They couldn't have any children. So, I mean, he takes on, you know, Robert Baratheon and Ned Stark. I mean, those are his, you know, he has them, he's raising them, he's
right.
I don't know. I mean, it's they were sent there. They were, well, Robert was the first son, but Ned wasn't. So anyways, but they're raised at the Eyrie. An interesting point here that I want to make is John has a younger brother, Ronald, and a sister, Alice? Is that it? I think.
Yeah.
Who married Sir Ellis Waynewood. Okay. Now, the reason I wanted to bring up the brother, Ronald, is that, you know, he has a son who becomes, it's Albert Aaron, and he actually, since John doesn't have any children, he is going to be heir to, you know, the
House
veil.
Aaron, yeah.
Yeah. And so, don't even know if we want to do this yet, but I'm going to do it. I don't care. You know what? Bend the knee. All right.
Yeah.
When you talk about Robert's rebellion and you talk about reasons why things happen, I believe John Aaron was one of the first people to call his banners.
Yeah.
And go, and that's how the war starts. I mean, you have to imagine he has two sons, right? He's got Ned and he has Robert, and those are his sons and he loves them. And when you find out that Lyanna Stark is captured, kidnapped by Rhaegar, they send Albert Aaron down to King's Landing with everybody else. And Albert Aaron is murdered with all of them, you know, down there. That's a big deal. And I've always sort of, you know, in my studying here today, like this week, getting ready for this, I wanted to know more about the Aerie and
the Vale,
yeah, and the Aaron family, because it comes into play later when Sansa gets there. But
it's not really one that is like mentioned a lot in the show,
and it's later in the books,
in the books too. Yeah, the line right here. His eyes found hers, and she could see how hard it took him. This is when she's telling him John Aaron is dead.
Yeah.
As she had known it would. In his youth, Ned had fostered in the Eyrie, and the childless Lord at the childless Lord Aaron had become a second father to him and his fellow ward, Robert Baratheon. When the Mad King, Aerys II Targaryen, had demanded their heads, the Lord of the Eyrie had raised his moon and falcon banners in revolt rather than giving up those who he had pledged to protect.
Right. Well, part of that was they went down to demand that Rhaegar, they wanted Rhaegar's head for kidnapping her. And I mean,
Lyanna Stark,
as far as they knew, he kidnapped her. And maybe he did. I mean,
we don't know,
We don't really know. So he kidnaps her. So the Starks are going down. And Robert Baratheon is, you know, he's betrothed to her at this time. And so you can see from Jon Arryn's point of view how hurt, you know, Ned, his sister, is kidnapped. And then Robert, this is his, you know, to-be wife, is gone. So, I mean, he sends his heir down there, which is crazy. You know, Albert Aaron goes down and is killed. I mean, it's a big deal. And then they send for their fathers to come down as well. So they actually sent, Brandon Stark went as well, and he was, you know, killed too. So anyways, it's just, it's kind of crazy to think about John, because we always see him as this older guy. You know, he's kind-hearted, he's kindly, he's very trusting and things like that. To see him call his banners is cool, because, you know, the Vale doesn't really do much in this series. They kind of play a quiet role,
right?
And for them to be a big part of the rebellion, is it's almost like they've done their, you know, they've you know, they played their part in the rebellion, and so they're almost like, okay, you guys are, especially with Robert Baratheon sitting on the throne, they've got a special, you know, spot in his heart. But anyways, so I mean, that's sort of your history, is the context, the backstory to how John Aaron is significant to them. John Aaron later, though, as a part of the rebellion to kind of unite some houses, the Tullys, it's actually funny, Ned and John both become like brothers.
Right.
Right? They become brothers because they take you know,
Tully wives.
Yeah. And how cool is that?
Yeah.
So, what else do we have here, though, just concerning, you know, John Aaron and his, just some different things here. Oh, then he later on has more history here, which this will all come up later as well, so I don't want to spoil too much of it.
I mean, but he does have a son later.
He does have a son
with
later,
Liza,
yeah.
With Liza Tully, yeah.
Right, with Liza. And at the time, though, when that happens, he's old.
He's
missing some teeth, you know. He's she's making comments about his breath and different things. So, that's something. You know, something that when I was doing my research that I kind of forgot about? Robert Baratheon actually had a, and this will come up later, a bastard in the Vale.
I don't doubt it,
right? He already had one there. He was just sort of a rowdy youth, you know what I mean? Just sort of like whatever. And then after that, he's struck by this, like, he's betrothed to Lyanna Stark, but he also loves her. Yeah. And I've heard people say that he just, you know, even Ned kind of says, you know, whether he truly, he saw the beauty of Lyanna. Did he see all the other, you know, characteristics and awesomeness to her?
Right.
Was what Ned always, in a small part of it, the back of his mind kind of reserved to that thought that maybe he did. Maybe that's really the only reason he, you know, just. Also, she's the one that got away. I mean, he never had a chance to, like, to be that way. I mean, I think even Lyanna at one point makes a statement that, you know, he couldn't keep to one bed.
Right.
You
know, oh, absolutely.
Or something. But she, but also, she, you know, it's sort of like he would have, I feel like there still would have been a better marriage and, you know, relate, you know, like he, I don't know. I feel like the thing with Cersei, he would not have treated her the way that he treats Cersei.
Oh, absolutely not.
It just, right. But anyway, sorry, I took us down a tangent there.
No, that's okay. Yeah.
Just to kind of understand Robert and this rebellion, which we, Matt and I are going to do more like an actual history, a comb through of Robert's rebellion and the tourney at Harrenhal. So that's coming soon. But I guess it's really it about the significance of it. Catelyn goes on to kind of, sympathize with Ned and that, you know, I know how much this means to you. And he was like a father to you, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
All right. And I think the last part here, we're going to jump into that.
Yeah.
The king is coming north.
Absolutely.
That's a big deal.
It's a big deal. Yeah. She gives, Ned tells Catelyn when she's talking about Jon Arryn, he says, you know, please go to the Vale, comfort your sister. And she's like, I would if I could.
Right.
But I have other news. The king is coming north. And then we see Ned's like face kind of lights up. He's like, Robert?
Yeah.
Robert's coming?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not very long in the chapter. This chapter is also not very long as well.
Right now, yeah.
The audiobook version was like 13 minutes.
Yeah, 19.
Like 19 minutes, something like that. And so anyway, we just find out that Robert's riding north and he's bringing his brothers, or he's bringing the Lannister brothers are coming. Mm-hmm. He's married to House Lannister. And Catelyn says that like the queen's pride grows every day.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And we just know that they're going to have a feast. And that's pretty much about it. But we just know that, okay, the king is coming and he's seeking Ned out.
Right.
Yeah.
And Catelyn Tully has heard people in the yard talking about the signs. Mm-hmm. And she admired Ned because he doesn't, you know, believe in the signs as much. I mean, he's just sort of like, it is what it is. A direwolf was killed with an antler, you know, whatever. I mean, like, whatever. I mean, but to everyone else at Winterfell, it's like, oh, what does this mean? What does this mean?
Yeah. And that was my big takeaway last week.
Yeah.
And I kind of forgot that she had thought that.
Yeah.
So when I read that this week, I was like, oh, I said that.
Yeah. 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 And she does. I mean, she's super concerned about it, but like appreciates that Ned doesn't concern himself with it. It's like he's just a real, it's like life will be what life will be. I'm not going to, you know, give a lot of weight to these different signs and symbols that I can't control and stuff. So, but everyone's talking about it. And so it is kind of interesting. It's good to see that he's excited. This is like good news to him, you know, and like you said, it's, he asked about the children. He's like, how old are the children? You know, and you learn that Bran and Tommen are about this, they're seven each, same age. And, you know, he's a little upset that Jaime Lannister and Tyrion Lannister are going to be there, but it is what it is. He's like, gods, how are we going to feed them all, you know, and stuff. But they kind of brush over his disgruntledness with the Lannisters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a quick, we don't have to look anything up here or whatever, but just, you know, you and I can talk briefly about what happened during Robert's rebellion that would cause him to be that way.
Yeah.
Why is he okay with, you know, the other kingdoms, but then not necessarily, you know, the Lannister kingdom, right? I mean, why is it that he has issues there?
Right.
And it's simply just because they came, I think it says in this chapter, you know, they came to Robert's, you know,
rebellion at the very, very end.
When it was clear that victory, you know, was to be had.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, and then he has the showdown with the Kingslayer, Jaime Lannister. They are both there, and Ned is able to take the throne. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he wanted to sit on that throne, he could have, but it wasn't his rebellion.
Right.
And I think that's what he kind of knew, is that this is not my rebellion. We're rallying behind, you know,
Robert.
And also, he was a second son, so he was not necessarily...
He also doesn't care.
Right. He doesn't want that, but also, I do think some of it comes... If this were Brandon Stark, And you know what I mean? I actually think, and he's bred to be like, I'm ready to be a leader or whatever. I think those two would have had, Brandon is older than Robert, I believe. And I think it would have been more of a Stark rebellion. I mean, the reasons that the Starks are involved, one is it's a sister,
right.
It's there, but it's also their lord was just killed, you know, and Brandon. Yeah. And so Ned is like all of a sudden
had they just killed
Their father.
Their father. Yeah. Have they just killed the father, and then it was, okay, now it's a totally different.
Yeah, it's just a different dynamic. I don't think Robert really then cares too much about the throne, you know?
Yeah, he just wants the honor.
He just wants blood, like, and he wants to face.
Back. Yeah,
exactly, right. Exactly. So I think things are a little bit different there, but that's just part of why I think Robert was first son, and he it's his rebellion, and it kind of turned into he's got to lead the charge here, and that's how he, Ned, and John Arryn become close. And the Kingslayer there, you know, he kills King Aerys right before they show up.
Yeah,
and
stabs him right in the back, and then he's sitting in the Iron Throne.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Just kind of like lounging in it.
Was he in the book or the movie?
I think in the book they just say he's just kind of like sitting in it. There's a lot of the fan art.
That's
on the Song of Ice and Fire wiki shows like Jaime like just kind of like lounging in the chair stuff like that. So.
Okay, yeah. I do just remember, though, like, it was offered to, like, Ned. You know, Ned came was leading a different force and was able to sack and get into King's Landing. And that was made easier because the Lannisters were there to kind of open the door. Here you go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not challenge that force. Just no need to. Just play on the Game of Thrones.
Yep.
So, yeah, the king is coming north. Let me also throw in something here that wasn't in the chapter that I think everyone needs to know. There's a king coming north, but there's also a king coming south.
It actually is mentioned.
Is it mentioned?
It's mentioned in the chapter. I was going to say that. Just one last time, guys. I just have to say it. Ned saw the dread on her face. Mance Rayder is nothing for us to fear.
Wow.
And Ned says, Ned lifted ice, looked down the cool steel length of it. And it will only grow worse. The day may come when I will have no choice but to call the banners and ride north to deal with this king beyond the wall.
Okay. Yeah, I can't remember when
the third chapter in Mance Rayder is mentioned again.
Again, yeah.
I mean, chapter two, but just for the kind of the prologue.
Yeah. Overall. Yeah, I mean, that's huge. That's a big moment. That's like an epic moment where it's like he is Warden of the North. He is to protect the Seven Kingdoms. It is his charge to do that. And he may have to take, you know, the North to war beyond the wall. Sort of like Stannis does later on. I mean, big, big deal. Could you imagine if we saw something like that? Would be epic.
Absolutely.
That would have been absolutely epic because they had giants and all sorts of things, you know. I mean, they have a host, you know. But I think he would have just manned the wall for a while too, scouted it out. And I would love to have a discussion someday of like what would they have had to do to beat the. Oh, man. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But, yeah, don't forget though the king beyond, and I actually like the king beyond the wall.
Mance Rayder is a really cool character.
Really cool character.
May still be alive.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is. Yeah, apparently. Yeah. So far as I can tell. So, anyways, he's coming south, and he will be at this feast. He will be sitting there. So, we'll have to look for references to music and things when you know the king gets there and they hold a feast and stuff like that. So, something to look forward to. So, all right, guys, that's chapter two. It is a short one. Matt's got some cool connections, though, some vocab for this episode.
Some cool connections / vocab for this episode. Very early in the chapter, let me pull it up here. It says, Catelyn had been born a Tully at River Run farther than north on the Red Fork of the Trident. And I thought I would just, we're going to do two. We're going to do the Trident and House Tully.
Okay. Awesome.
I thought it'd be cool to talk about the Trident because it's a big deal. It's just also a pretty important place. It's kind of where the North and the South meet.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Neck, right? That's where you have the Freys and the Twins. Right.
Just south of the Twins, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the Trident is you have these three rivers that kind of split off. It is a major river in the Riverlands of the Seven Kingdoms, made of numerous smaller tributaries. It is one of the largest rivers on the continent of Westeros. It is a confluence of three main forks, the Red, the Green, and the Blue, which join west of Lord Howerway's town at the crossroads and eventually flow into the Bay of Crabs.
Mm-hmm.
Salt Pans and the Quiet Isle are located at the mouth of the Trident. And so that's just kind of like where it is in the map.
Right. Mm-hmm.
During Robert's rebellion, Lord Robert Baratheon defeated Prince Rhaegar Targaryen at the Battle of the Trident. The site became Rhaegar, the site of Rhaegar's death became known as the Ruby Ford because when Robert slams him in the chest, you can see these rubies of his breastplate falling out. So it's just kind of a locale, kind of a place. You can pull up a map of Westeros and look at that.
Yeah, can I make a quick plug, too, there? Yeah, go ahead. The Trident, we actually had a big discussion last night with Sir David the Huntsman, who was here, and this is on our is this on our Patreon? No, this will be out.
This will be out, just a theory, on the page,
So we're kind of getting you guys just, what we used to do on Second Breakfast was we would just do theories, we'd do Season 9 stuff, and we actually talked about where the final battle may happen, and we mentioned the Trident a lot.
Yeah.
And so I think it's cool that we're talking about it now in the beginning, because I think it will come back to play at the end.
Yeah.
So
okay, and then my second one is House Tully, because we hear that Catelyn is, even Ned says, I should know better than to argue with a Tully.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
House Tully of Riverrun is one of the great houses of the Seven Kingdoms. Lord Hoster Tully, the Lord Paramount of the Trident, rules over the Riverlands from the Tully seat of Riverrun. Their sigil is a silver trout leaping on a striped field of red, of blue and mud red, and their house words are family, duty, honor.
Yeah.
And I have a note here in the chapter at the very end, family, duty, honor. This is chapter 2, Catelyn, her first chapter. Because as we progress, we'll have to actually name it like the way the book does, where it's like they name the POV, the POV chapters and stuff like that. Kat starts the chapter talking of Bran and the children, and she's also like wanting to take care of Ned. Family. The duty she has to tell Ned about Jon Arryn. It's her duty to tell him, I have to present you with this news, even though it's hard. She doesn't want to. So, duty.
Right. She even refer to him as Lord?
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
Lord Stark.
Then honor, when she's talking about the queen, when Ned says something about him sucking at her teat, and he's like, Ned, that's like the queen. You can't say that. And so I just thought it was funny. Now, they haven't actually said like family duty honor. This is the Tully thing. They don't say that in this chapter.
Yeah.
I just like was doing research and I kind of thought it was interesting that that's kind of the way this chapter plays out. And so I just thought it was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And something I've always wanted to do is to get into the Tully connection, I'll call it, because the Tullys are greatly connected to other houses. There's a lot of alliances that are made with House Tully. And
it makes a lot of sense, too, if you look at where they're at. They're the great house of like the middle of Westeros.
Yeah, right. They're surrounded. I mean, it's important that they have strong allies and stuff like that. So Brendan Tully, is a big player, and he's the brother to, you know, Hoster Tully, and we get into him being the Blackfish later on and all the things that happen. Yeah, he's sick. I would love to, as we go, we'll be talking a lot about the Tullys and just sort of their connections, because there are tons of connections spread throughout the book. I mean, so many that I was overwhelmed when I first read it. I didn't quite understand who all they were connected with, and you really do need to almost look at a map sometimes, because this stuff gets a little bit overwhelming, but... But yeah, I mean, great. That's cool. I love that we're talking about the Tullys there. So, okay. Wow, guys. I mean, I think that's it. We got our cool connections in there. Like we said, it's a short chapter. We are waiting for those ravens, by the way.
Yeah.
So, send them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we do, quick plug for the Patreon again, we do theories. We're going to do theories here on the main show as well. We won't do it on the reread portion, so we have these every Monday. Matt and I have talked, and we think that maybe sometime later in the week we might drop every now and then just a bonus episode, which is sort of like a theories / predictions. Those are cool. People like those.
Those will probably be focused maybe a little bit more on like the show potentially,
And where we think it's going to go. We just had a really cool discussion, like I said, with Sir David the Huntsman, and that will be out later. Hopefully, should we do it later this week?
Then of course, so the main show will always be on Monday. But then of course, if Fire and Blood comes out this year, if it does, if we get any huge news, like they say Winds of Winter is coming.
Oh, Lord.
When Winds of Winter comes, we're probably going to do
two shows.
Of course, next year when the new season comes out, absolutely, that's probably going to be on Sunday nights, like right afterwards. Just response.
We've reserved this Monday spot. We may even go like to a Monday, Tuesday, where we do like, Monday being the reaction to the show, and then Tuesday the reread. Something like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We got too much stuff coming on Sunday, so we're always like, let's move it out to the end of the week a little bit. So yeah, just be kind of, you know, ready for that. I hope everybody's diving into the books, and you know, just be aware that we're going to take it, you know, slow and try to build context as we go.
Yeah, and we'll also be, and we're also going to be doing YouTube stuff too.
Yeah.
So those are going to be kind of more like bigger, like I'm going to be doing bigger summaries of Our World of Ice and Fire, but we could also do theories there and stuff like that too. So when we do, we'll post a link, say, hey, new YouTube videos up and stuff like that.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, guys, I think that's it. Join the discussion at facebook.com/ Bend the Knee. Send us those Ravens, or you know, also if you could, I haven't really plugged this a whole lot, but any reviews we can get on iTunes would be huge.
Absolutely.
We may be doing some swag giveaway for that later too. Matt and I haven't really got into that, but we definitely are gonna plug that. One more thing I forgot to plug, and I wanted to do this on the Patreon. There is a sick, I mean a sick ass logo that we have for t-shirts, possible mugs. Take the black, go check, at least go look at it. I mean, admire the artwork that we, I thought our artist did a really good job on that. So just wanted to kind of throw that out there. But yeah, those are all things to come. All right, it's time to say our farewell here. Go ahead there, Matt. Give us a little, you know, farewell sign off here.
Sorry, I wasn't there. I just want to thank you guys for playing the Game of Thrones.
It is a game that you have to play, you know?
And our next episode will be Chapter 3, Daenerys.
Yeah.
And as always, Maluka has provided us with our beautiful outro music. Thank you so much for letting us do that. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review on iTunes, as kind of already mentioned that. Send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com. We will see you in a week. And remember, fire and water.